Hey everyone, welcome back to Why the Flick, a podcast where we watch a new movie each episode and ask ourselves, why the flick did we watch this? I'm your host, Claire, and this week I am joined by my sister, Kelly. So nice to have you here.
Hi, great to be here.
Not only are you coming back on because you came on last season.
I did.
But guys, I know the listeners can't tell because, you know, there's no video. But if you follow us on social, you'll be able to notice that we're in the same room together, guys.
Yay!
We figured it out. I spent like 4 hours the other day.
Claire worked so hard.
Yeah. Trying to get it to work. Trying to get us in the same room. Last time, we were in the same house.
But I was downstairs and you were upstairs. Yeah.
Because I couldn't figure it out. But we were in the same room. This is like a first for the podcast.
It's fantastic. Because now we can actually see each other's reactions.
I know.
Yeah.
And riff off each other and everything.
Yep.
And I think it's so fitting, too, that you're here for this episode because, as listeners know, we have been doing Mother Nature is a Motherfucker Month.
The best title.
Thank you. Thank you. And so this is, sadly, though, this is our last movie in the series, but we are going out with a bang because we are doing The Day After Tomorrow.
One of my absolute favorites. I love it so much.
Yeah. I'm super excited, too. I'm pretty sure, like, I told you I was doing this series,
mm-hmm.
and it was when I was talking about Twister, and you were like, well, are you going to do The Day After Tomorrow? And I was like, well, do you want to come on and do it with me? And you kindly agreed.
100%.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, we definitely had to do something big for Mother Nature as a Motherfucker Month, and this is like the big Superstorm movie. It might even be like the first Superstorm movie.
You know, it might be. And like, you're right. All the things happen in this movie. There's tornadoes, there's floods, there's a blizzard, there's rain, there's hail, just all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it's got everything. Something, a little bit of something for everyone, you know. But it is directed by Ronald Emmerich. He also co-wrote the screenplay. Hey, listeners, I wanted to pop in here because I realized while editing this episode that I called the director by the wrong name. His name is Roland Emmerich, and that's totally my bad. But, you know, these things happen sometimes. But yeah, so sorry about that. And please enjoy the rest of the episode. Funnily enough, I think it's very fitting, too, that this is like our last movie for this series because this film has connections to two other films that we did for this series. So we did Poseidon Adventure. That was the first movie we did.
That movie scared the crap out of you when you were a child.
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm. Very much so. But the sequel had Emmy Rossum. Yeah, Emmy Rossum's in this movie. Yeah. And then Twister, Ronald Emmerich also directed Independence Day. And Independence Day beat out Twister for like best visual effects or something. So it all comes back to The Day After Tomorrow, pretty much.
I mean, basically.
Yeah.
Started a trend.
So I'll read the IMDb description for anyone who hasn't seen this movie, but please go watch this movie.
Right. If you haven't seen this movie, where have you been?
Take a pause on the podcast, go watch the movie, then come back.
And then come back.
Yeah. But it says, Jack Hall, paleoclimatologist, must make a daring trek from Washington, D.C. to New York City to reach his son, trapped in the crosshairs of a sudden international storm, which plunges the planet into a new ice age. Which happens pretty late in the movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of buildup.
Yeah, I'll say. So kind of gives away a little bit of maybe like the last half of the movie, but there's quite a bit that happens before that time, but, you know, sometimes IMDb descriptions are, like, hit or miss, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear from you first. Like, what was your first experience? Do you remember, like, watching this movie?
I don't remember. Okay. I'm the old and don't remember things from 20 years ago because I have the old brain. I do know that anytime that it's on TV, I will absolutely watch it. Monster or like disaster movies where shit goes down and like towns are destroyed, those are my jam.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't remember the first time I watched it, but I know I've seen it at least 25 times.
Oh yeah, I've seen this movie so many times. Dad and I went to see this in theaters.
Did you really?
Yeah. Dad and I went to go see it. I remember it was like the summer blockbuster. Like, it was the movie to see of that year. And so Dad and I went to go see it together. And I don't know if it was like the AC in the movie theater or it was just like us psychologically, but we were like freezing afterward. So there was that. And then also I remember when the scene where the helicopter crashes after it's frozen over and the guy comes out and he just is like freezing to death. I remember Dad being like, oh my God, like to next to me, like shooketh.
Shooketh.
Yeah. And the other thing too, like that I was kind of reading up about this movie, quite a lot of different things about it, but one thing in particular is like how much it has to say about global warming and climate change.
Oh, absolutely.
Too, which it like at the time felt very timely back then, but also even more so now. And like, it was one of the first movies to like big, like blockbuster movies to like take a stand and say like, yes, global warming is happening. Everyone.
I wonder when, do you remember when Gore was doing his like climate change? He started doing that whole thing. I wonder if that was around the same time.
Yeah, I don't know. 2004. Hard to say. I'm not good with years.
No, me either.
Or anything like that. And so,
I don't even like, I know that. I love disaster movies. So like this one, 2012, San Andreas, Dante's Peak, Volcano. But I couldn't tell you when any of those came out or like what came out first or any of that. I just know I love them.
Yeah. I mean, especially politically, all I know is that Bush was president, which is also ironic considering the president and the vice president in this movie are basically like caricatures of not Donald Trump.
Oh God. No, thank you.
My bad. Caricatures of Bush and the vice president is 100% a caricature of Dick Cheney.
So much. Yeah. And he is the absolute worst.
Yeah. There was like so much, that they like talked about in the making of this movie in terms of deciding to basically like mock Dick Cheney in this role. And
they
like,
did a great job.
Yeah. Like people accused them of being unfair to Dick Cheney. And they were like, we're like literally taking lines from his speeches and putting it in the movie. So
they used actual lines from some of his speeches.
That's what I said. They said they literally copied lines that Cheney had said.
Wow.
In his speeches in certain parts.
Yeah, because the vice president's a dick in this movie. Sorry, can I say that? Is that okay?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We have a whole segment about Dick of the Flick. Also, I forgot to tell you we have segments, so that'll be...
Oh, okay.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, more, like, cool behind-the-scenes stuff. The movie is largely, or not largely, loosely based on the 1999 book, The Coming Global Superstorm. And actually, originally, the studio didn't want it to be, like, a hot button message movie. They want it to be more like sci-fi thriller.
Really?
Which is interesting because the whole movie is like a commentary on global warming.
Literally the whole thing.
Yeah, like it's the whole point
of
the movie.
That's the premise of the movie.
But the goal of the filmmakers was to like raise public opinion and around global warming. And so like, yeah, it was the first Hollywood blockbuster to use its premise to focus on climate change and make a lot of money. So like I have more things to say about the global warming effect of it all, but I'll save it for when we get to that point.
Okay.
So yeah, but yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, I feel like it's aged pretty well. Like I really enjoy watching it.
Yeah.
And it's 20 years old. I can't believe it.
I mean, really. And the graphics for being 20 years old are really, I mean, there are some parts where it's like, okay, you can tell that's 20 years old, but a lot of it is decent for the time.
Yeah This was especially like a feat in CGI too, and like I feel like we started this series that we're doing for Mother Nature's a Motherfucker Month, we started with like Poseidon Adventure, which came out in the 70s, so like it was only practical effects basically. Then we had Twister, which was like kind of a leap in doing more CGI. Mm-hmm. And now this was like CGI on steroids.
Pretty much.
But like it does look visually stunning. All of the storms, like all of the different like disasters that they use. Like I just feel like it does look pretty good. It still like holds up to today.
Absolutely. Those tornadoes, they did a really good job with the tornadoes. Like you can like you get scared watching them. It feels, I don't want to say realistic because like, I mean, we don't want it to be realistic, but they look like real tornadoes.
Yeah. And then you think about how like the movie opens and it's like, I mean, all of the opening is CGI of like the ice shelves and like they're like cameras like panning over the ocean. Then it goes to the icebergs. Then it goes to where Dennis Quaid and his like crew are working. And it's like that stuff, like especially when you watched it in theaters for the first time, it felt like an IMAX documentary. And you're
I forgot about IMAX. Oh. We used to go to those at the, is it the museum?
That's what I thought.
I think so.
But yeah, like it just looks like you're just transported to a whole other world. And like, especially with that opening scene, I feel like that is such foreshadowing to what happens later in the movie. Like they're going to Antarctica and it's like this ice age, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, what's going to happen later.
I love that that's like our introduction that to Dennis Quaid too. You're like, ah, Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
Of course, in 2004, it probably wasn't like, ah, Dennis Quaid, but you don't see him in anything anymore. So.
No, I think I like only knew him from like The Parent Trap.
Yes.
That's the only thing I really remember.
That was with Lolo, wasn't it?
Lindsay Lohan?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Lilo. That's what they call her, Lilo.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
And I think she was actually, from what I read on IMDb trivia, she was maybe going to be in this movie, which would have been like so cool to have them reunite. She was going to be Emmy Rossum's character.
Not going to lie, I'm glad that she wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Emmy Rossum a lot. Yeah,
me too.
And that's like another staple of disaster movies that I've noticed while doing this series now. I mean, I guess I knew it kind of, maybe subconsciously, but like these movies always have like a fucking stacked cast. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, we've got Dennis Quaid, Emmy Rossum, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, Jakey. He's so cute in this movie. He's so young and his blue eyes and he's just adorable.
He's just a little baby Jakey.
He's a little baby Jakey.
Yeah. And then Ian Holm, which I, okay, also, by the way, guys, sorry, this episode is like manic because Kelly and I also watched this movie together the other day and we're recording in person. So we're probably going to be like, I'll remember this, remember that. But when Ian Holm came on the screen, I was like, oh, first of all, Ian Holm, love him. But also like he was just coming off the high of Lord of the Rings because Return of the King came out in 2003. And so this was just the year after. So like even when I watched it in theaters, I was like, that's Bilbo.
It's Bilbo. That's what I saw. I was like, is that Bilbo?
Yep.
Bilbo.
Oh, Bilbo. Some other people. Who else did we? Oh, the guy, the astronaut is the guy from Grimm.
Yes. And I never realized that until we were watching it on Friday.
Go ahead.
Also, I didn't remember, and Claire pointed it out to me, that Dennis Quaid is Jack Quaid's dad.
Yeah.
And we love The Boys. Mm. Like, it's something that we both watch and talk about. So it never even clicked in my head that that's his son.
Yeah. I always forget, too. I'm like, oh, that's the Quaids. Because sometimes I'm like, I see a similar name in Hollywood, and I'm like, are they related? And most of the time they're not, but this time they actually are. They're father and son.
Yep.
But yeah, Sasha Ruiz is that astronaut, and he's the police captain in Grimm, which like my husband and I last year we watched the whole Grimm series like from start to finish. Oh, I didn't. I kind of jumped in midway through and then I got a little sucked in, needless to say. But yeah, we watched that. And then the other person I wanted to just quickly point out was Rick Hoffman, who is in the movie for 5 seconds. That's the guy who gets on the New York City bus. He's the one who's like,
the rich guy?
Yeah.
Who's like,
my bad. Or no, you're bad. He like runs into someone and he goes,
oh, yeah, yeah.
He goes, you're bad. And then he pays the bus driver.
He's like, I'll give you $100 to keep it in service. 200.
Yeah. No, I insist. And then he walks into that.
He's like the typical New York sort of like dude.
Yeah.
Rich guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And so like, I feel like I see him in so many things, but I don't know him. I don't know what it's from. I think the only thing is like I saw that he's been in like so many episodes of Suits, which I don't watch. But then I also noticed he's in that new Elf commercial with Judge Judy.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Okay, we have to go watch it. But yeah, he's in that. So that's really only where I know him from. But I feel like I've seen him in so many other
things. Yeah, his face is very familiar.
Yeah.
But I can't think of like a main role movie that he's ever been in.
It was just like a cute little cameo for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Dennis Quaid plays Jack, who is like basically the main person we're like following in this movie. And like, not to jump too far away from the opening sequence, but I do think like that's a really cool scene to kind of set us up for what we're about to expect, and how like, is there anything more ominous than a crack of ice?
Oh my gosh.
Coming closer and closer to you.
And I let the action starts immediately. So you know that stuff's going to happen. Like, they're already almost falling into a crack in the ice. They have to, it's really cool.
Yeah. I like it so much. And like, even when like they open the door and look out at poor Jason, and Jason's like, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. And then everything just goes whomp and, you know, falls apart. Mm-hmm. Jack's got to like make an Olympic leap over to get the samples, I guess. Cause I was originally like, why does he have to do that? But I guess like they need the samples so they can, I guess, find out what's going on. And then leaps back. I think that's just a great like opening sequence to really like get us going, mm-hmm. get us prepared for like the chaos that's about to happen.
And I like how you called him a climatologist, but his real title is a weather scientist, because I couldn't remember the name for climatologist, so we came up with weather scientist.
Yeah, Kelly and I were watching this, and Kelly goes, he's a weather scientist. And I'm like, fair, he is.
I mean, technically.
Actually, we were both wrong, because he's actually a paleoclimatologist.
Oh, is that like climate of the before?
Yeah.
I told you I'm too blonde.
That is, so he's not just a climatologist. He studies climate shifts during, I don't fucking know. I don't know science. But yeah, I guess like prehistoric climate changes.
Well, that makes, that tracks, because he talks about like the previous ice age. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's what he was studying. And that's how he realized that, not to spoil the plot, but that's how he realized that we were heading towards a new ice age.
Yeah. This is like one thing I did take a lot of like detailed notes about, because I was like, I wrote my, literally the section is called the quote science, because I also have things to say about how real this is. But yeah, like basically what's happening is Jack has this theory that we're about to have an abrupt climate shift, and it's triggered by global warming creating this like cooling trend. And he goes into like this whole explanation about how the northern hemisphere gets its climate from the North Atlantic current, and like heat from the sun comes to the equator and then like distributes or whatever around the earth, who knows. But because of global warming, at the rate we're burning fossil fuels, the polar ice caps are melting too fast. And so like it's dumping all of this fresh water into the ocean, which is causing like the current to like basically glitch.
Much science.
Yeah. Science. And eventually, like, basically the current's going to shut down, which is not good for, like, our climate, because it's going to mean that we're not going to have any warm weather, which sucks.
Right. So all of those icebergs melting and dumping into the ocean, it's causing, because those are, like, fresh water, it's causing, he calls it desalinization, and the water's getting colder, and then there's more of it, and it disrupts the whole sort of weather stuff.
Yeah.
We'll call it weather stuff.
Yeah, weather.
Yeah, and that's – could you imagine, like, if you were a dinosaur or, like, a mammoth, and this – you wouldn't know. Like, the animals in this movie – I always feel so bad for the animals in this movie, especially when they go into the, like, little zoo area and they're all locked up. It's like, oh, they're all going
to
die.
I know. I try not to think about it, but it's really sad. And the wolves, even though like they try to make the wolves bad, I'm like, the wolves are just being wolves.
You know how I feel about the wolves.
They just be wolfing, you know.
They just be wolfing. They're way over the top.
Okay, we'll get to that.
But
yeah.
We'll talk about
it. Yeah. But you're right. Like, yeah, like, I'm sorry. No, there was something you said that was going to make me say something, and I've completely forgotten what it was, but I'll move on. It's fine.
We'll think of it.
Yeah, but like I think they do a really good job of like incrementally like making things more ominous until we get to like all the crazy weather happening, because there's all those buoys.
Buoys. Boys.
Actually, it's boys. B-O-I-Z. No. But what is it?
Buoy. It's a buoy.
Buoys.
like boo, but with an E at the end.
Buoys. There you go.
There you got it.
Buoys, they're all showing like this massive drop in temperature. And they're like, what are the odds that threes of blinky lights on a screen are going to cause us to have chaos, utter chaos? And so like, oh, that's what I remember now. So you had said the desalinization, which mm-hmm. like, great remembrance. I would not have unless I wrote it down. I only wrote it down because when Dennis Quaid says, I think we've reached a desalinization point, everyone goes,
like they all know what it means.
I was like,
they're all science.
I was like, oh, so there's less salt. Got it.
100%. Also, we talked about the guys in the research center that see the buoys. And they're, I swear, out of all of the stories, their story is the saddest. Like, their whole timeline is just so sad because they're so cute. And it's Bilbo. But when they find the buoys, I was so confused because they're all, like, in a line, right? There's the North Atlantic Current. So if they're all in a line, how come only three or four of them are noticing this 13-degree drop in temperature and not all of them in that line?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Again, I don't know a lot about this type of science.
I feel like that was just the plot hole.
Yeah, I think because, they talk later on about these supercell storms and, one's forming over Canada, one's over Scotland, and one's over Siberia. So I wonder if, it's just to show, because there were two, off the coast of Greenland, I think, and then one that was near New York City. So maybe it was just a way to, foreshadow that stuff happening.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know why those ones in particular. I think it was just to make things ominous and be like, make that three. There's three buoys. I got the word.
There
right.
You go.
And so, yeah, everything kind of, escalates pretty much very quickly where, Jack's like, this wasn't supposed to happen for, hundreds of years. And now it's happening in 6 to 8 weeks, which is, not even that. It happens in 6 to 8 days.
Right. Their timeline was so off. He started at 1,000 and then he went to 100 years. And then it was 6 to 8 weeks. And it was within 10 days, this is going to, we're going to be in a whole new climate era.
It's happening the day after tomorrow. I wish I could take credit for that. I only know because I looked up, why did they name it the day after tomorrow? And they were just like, because crazy weather can happen at an instant, basically.
This is true.
Yeah. So yeah, we've explained the science as best we can. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the real science, because I think one of the first things that came up when I Googled the day after tomorrow was scientists were so pissed off.
That tracks.
At the inaccuracies in this movie. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, though. There's scientists who criticize the realness of all of this happening. And then there's scientists who disagree, but also are well, it raised awareness. But according to IMDb trivia, in 2008, Yahoo Movies listed this movie as one of the top 10 scientifically inaccurate movies.
No.
So it's I don't know. I'll get into it when I talk more. But scientists were really polarized on the film. Critics said the science is incredibly wrong. Some said it trivialized the climate change and made science a caricature. And the main thing is you're not going to get this ice age out of global warming. It's going to lower temperatures, but it's not going to be anywhere near this dramatic. And it's going to play out over decades. It's not going to be the day after tomorrow.
See, but I think that, to me anyway, I disagree with that because I'm not a scientist. I don't know anything. But as a layperson, I feel like them showing it like that, mm-hmm. how drastic it – not that it could be, but, that's – first of all, that's the whole part of the movie. It's not supposed to be super realistic. They're bringing, I think, visualization to what climate change is, and they're bringing it to the surface. But I mean, I think we all knew that it wasn't going to, we weren't just going to get an ice age in 3 days once this happened. It's just part of the movie. It's how they, you know, it was for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, I think that part of it for me, like, I can forgive because even when I'm watching it, I know, like, this is not how this would, like, happen in real life.
Right.
It's going to play out so much slower and it's not going to be this dramatic. It's going to be bad, but it's not going to be this drastic. And so for me, like, yeah, it's just for the sake of the movie, because who wants to watch something that's going to play
right.
out over, like, you know, 1,000 years and it'd be kind of boring, no offense. But then, you know, you're also using this to increase awareness about global warming and make it more, like, tangible, I think, in a way. Because mm-hmm. let's be real. In 2004, and even now, there are people, especially though in 2004, people did not think global warming was even real. Like, it's gotten a lot better, I would say.
Has it though?
Yeah, who knows? I think we are doing like more awareness. Like, it's been more top of mind than ever before. But like, definitely back in early 2000s, like, there were so many people who thought that this wasn't real and this wasn't something to worry about.
For sure.
Spoiler, it is.
I would have never known what a carbon footprint was in 2004, but now I know what that means. So
yeah.
But also, who are we to say this would never happen? I get that we're not scientists and the scientists said that it wouldn't happen, but like, shit's unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well,
we could have an ice age in 10 days. Who knows?
Yeah. And I mean, if we don't reduce greenhouse gas emissions, like, we are going to fuck up our world, so to speak. Really quick, I just want to add my favorite quote of this article I read about the critics. This one scientist said, quote, "The thing my students were most skeptical about in the film was Jake Gyllenhaal participating in an academic decathlon. They just couldn't suspend disbelief on that one."
I mean, also that he's a high school teenage student.
Yeah.
When he's like 25, but whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, I was watching this with you and I was like, I get so confused. Is he in high school or college? Because he looks like he should be in college, but they keep talking about AP calculus. And I'm like,
yeah,
I think that's high school, baby.
They do that a lot. They do that a lot. They use older actors and actresses to fill teenage roles, which I get. I understand.
Yeah.
But at least he's adorable. He's fun to look at.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, like, even though the critics say like the science isn't accurate, they can still see like the value in getting something like this made and making people more aware of global warming and even like changing minds about global warming too. Mm-hmm. Apparently media coverage of this movie and the science within was, according to this article, 10 times greater than the real scientific report about global warming that was released like in 2001.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Like, really, as humans, we're kind of shitty. So it doesn't surprise me that it would take a blockbuster movie to make people think about climate change as opposed to actual scientific research.
Yeah.
But I feel like in this movie, it does the same thing because nobody believes Jack, right?
Yeah, Jack.
I want to call him Jake because of Jake Gyllenhaal, but it's Jack. Nobody believes Jack. And he even like, it's snowing in New Delhi. There's hail and hurricanes in Japan. It's raining for, you know, 4 days in New York. And still people don't think that this is a thing. They don't believe him, especially the vice president.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a common theme, I feel like, in a lot of these movies, is that people don't believe scientists when you need to believe the scientists. Like, listen mm-hmm. to the scientists, everyone, please do. And like, yeah, like you said, Jack tries to warn them. He tries to warn the vice president multiple times and he doesn't listen mm-hmm. until it becomes too late. And if we had just listened to Jack pre any of this happening, like, we could have even evacuated the like whole northern states too.
Yep. Everybody above the line that moves could have lived.
So the reason you said it, I'm going to explain why you said it like that. Because look, like, every time I watch this movie, there's a scene where Jack like draws the line across the U.S. and he's like, evacuate everyone south of this line. And I always feel safe because I'm like, I'm south of that line. Like, mm-hmm. we would get to evacuate. and we were watching, and I was like, see, look, we're south. And then literally like seconds later, they go to the map again and someone redrew the line. And I was like, I don't think I'd make it now.
No. And I joked that maybe like a housekeeper went in and erased the board, and they came in the next day to film, and they were like, who erased the board? We have to film this scene again. So somebody just haphazardly redrew the line. And it happens a couple times because it just keeps changing.
Yeah, this line changed like 5 times. Mm-hmm. We would like look at it, and every time they showed it in the background, it'd be somewhere different. Like there was also like you see Jack draw the line, mm-hmm. and it's pretty straight on. And then like later on, you see it again, and it's like curves upward a little.
Does.
Also, oh my god, we spent like 10 minutes rewinding and watching this scene when Kelly and I watched it together. Because, like, we were also like, where is Washington, D.C.?
Look, I'm not a cartographer. Is that what they're called? A map maker. I don't.
A map scientist.
Map scientist. We couldn't figure out. First of all, I was looking for D.C. And then I forgot I was looking for D.C. And then I was looking for New York. And then it was a cluster. I don't do maps.
Yeah, Kelly said, where's DC? Isn't it here? And literally pointed to New York City. And I was like, Kelly, what? You've gone too far.
But then I pointed to New York City because I forgot I was looking for New York City. And I said DC, but I didn't mean DC. And then we just got all confuddled.
Sure. Sure.
We're going to call it that.
Yeah. And then I went on literally on Google Maps and I was like, where is Washington, D.C.? And I was like, oh, there it is. Which, by the way, based on the lines that they kept redrawing, would not have been able to evacuate south.
No.
And they were like, "That's
we're safe."
Yeah, the VP was like, it's fine for Dennis Quaid to propose this. He's safely here in Washington. And then his boss says, his son is in Manhattan, bitch.
Right, bitch. That guy has some great one-liners throughout the movie. His boss, I can't remember who plays him, but he's very like, call him out 2004 because he
24/7. You mean
no? Call them out 2004. Like it's he's very call them out 2004 because he constantly is like looking at the vice president like, you could have saved a lot of people and you didn't because you're a dick.
Yeah, no, he says to the vice president, because the vice president says something again very fucking asshole-ish where he's like, oh blah blah blah, like I can't remember, but then that guy says you didn't want to hear about the science when it could have made a difference.
Yes, and he should have ended it with bitch.
Yeah. Jack also says something at the very, very beginning when they're in the New Delhi,
conference.
Yeah. And he says, well, the last ice sheet to break off was the size of Rhode Island. Some would call that pretty sensational. Bitch.
Bitch.
Just add bitch to everything. Maybe
all of it. Just add bitch to everything.
Maybe they would listen to the scientists if they just said bitch after everything.
I mean, there's a lot of problematic moments in this movie. Like when Jack is complaining about Sam's grades and he's like, he always gets A's. We don't do that in 2024. Mm-mm. We don't. No.
Yeah, we don't put pressure on kids to get straight A's these days. So that's so 2004, but that's not.
So 2004.
That's not 2024. Yeah. I'd say like. I think the whole dynamic between like Jack and his family is like, I don't want to say like the least least interesting thing about this movie.
Well,
but like, I don't really care about like them as a family. And I feel like that's something I've noticed too in natural disaster movies where like a lot, especially nowadays, it feels like the focus so much more on like the action that mm-hmm. happens and like
instead of the drama.
Yeah. And like you don't really, I feel like back in the day you used to care a lot more about characters because they would actually have character development. But in a movie like The Day After Tomorrow, I'm like, everything feels so like one dimensional and surface level.
Oh, sure.
That like I don't really care. Like I mean, I care if they were real people, but like if they since they're fictional characters, I'm like, I don't really care that you have a bad relationship with your dad and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they're all very stereotypical, right? Yeah. Like Jack is like the shitty dad 101. His mom, Lucy, is like the divorced mom mm-hmm. who spends all the time with the kid. And
she's a literal caretaker because she's a doctor.
Exactly. And Sam is like the neglected teen. He's got that sort of angsty attitude, I guess, from, yeah. you know, his dad being gone so much, which I wanted to bring up just quickly. I get that, like, he was doing good work. He's a scientist. We need people that do that. But also, if you know that you are so dedicated to your job that it's going to take you away from your family all the time, don't have a family. And as a mom of two kids who works full time, I feel like I can say that.
Yeah.
Don't come for me.
No. I mean, the thing that I was thinking about, especially this watch, was, do you think that actually Jack and his wife are divorced?
They're either separated or divorced.
Yeah, because they – I only really notice it when they're on the phone together mm-hmm. and he's in his own apartment, like,
yeah,
spraying water on plants and she's somewhere else. But then when I first watched it, I was like, oh, just because, like, they're in different cities or something. But then Jack goes to pick up Sam later mm-hmm. to go to the airport. So I was like, no, they live pretty close by, so – that led me to think that, like, they're separated or divorced.
I was just assumed they were separated or divorced. That's kind of another thing in these disaster sort of movies, is that there's always, like, a single dad who isn't doing his dad part, or, you know, is kind of neglectful. And the wife is always – they're either separated or living separately or divorced yeah. or whatever. I feel like that's a common theme in disaster movies.
Yeah, for sure. Always, like, their dad who has to, like, go through, like, this redemption arc at the end to, like...
Well, like, John Cusack in 2012. He's a shitty, you know, like, he's a dad and they're divorced and he is late to pick up his kids, which, just like Jack in this one. So it's, like, a trope that they follow, yeah. I feel like.
Well, 2012 was also directed by Ronald Emmerich, so...
Well, there you go.
He has a type.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think, like, the way that this builds to, like, the big storms that we get in the movie is so cool. Like, we get the small little inklings of things happening. Like, not that this is small, but, like, the hailstorm in Tokyo mm-hmm. that's, like, dropping these, like, football sized globes of glass. It's not glass. It's ice. Thank you. Basketball sized hails that I wrote down, on these people. Like, that's, like, weird, but right. Okay.
Like, there are so many signs early on in this movie. Like, who's the guy, the comedian that goes, there's your sign. I feel like they just do that through the whole movie. Like, there's your sign. And nobody is picking up on it at all.
Mm-mm. Like,
except for Jack and his team.
Well, yeah, he's noticing it. But, like, yeah, they have the, like, airplane scene when Sam's on there with mm-hmm. the two other people, Laura and, oh my God, I don't know the other guy's name. I'm so sorry.
Oh, gosh. I forgot.
I think it's Brian.
Brian. Yep.
Good.
Brian Parks.
Yeah. So anyway, Sam, Laura, and Brian on the plane. And that's when, like, they go into, like, this big storm cloud. And they're like, we're going to have some turbulence. Some turbulence?
Not just some turbulence.
That's a lot of turbulence.
What in the world? And then when it's done, everybody's just like, meh.
Everyone's
fine. That was nothing. Except for Jake Gyllenhaal. I watched it again last night. Do you think it was scripted that he was shoving all of those peanuts down his mouth? Or was that like he just did it? Because he is shoveling peanuts in his mouth on that plane.
I don't know. I could see Jake Gyllenhaal being like, wait, let me ad-lib this part. Ad-lib? What?
I thought you were saying, wait, I'm going to ad-lib. And I was like, oh, no, she's talking about Jake as. Oh, my God.
At a moment.
Cut that part out.
It's like it was a moment where I looked at you and I thought the screen froze. But I was like, no, I'm, like, literally looking at her in real life. And I
know my brain froze.
Well, first of all, I thought I said ad-libbed. Like, is that not even the right word? I think I meant to say improvised.
Improvised. That's the word I was trying to think of. My brain froze trying to think of improvisation. Yeah.
But then the birds also are flying out of New York City.
The birds! And Nobody doesn't. I mean, they're like, oh, look at that, birds. But nobody thinks. I would be like, what the fuck? Let's go. We have to go. First of all, I don't like birds. So that many birds in one area is just horrifying to me.
Yeah, I think if you look up in the sky and thousands of birds are like literally like we're gone yesterday, we're flying out of here this second, I'd mm-hmm. be like, maybe I should leave too.
I literally wrote down, those birds are not fucking normal. So
the birds know.
No, the birds are not fucking normal.
Yeah, so basically everything builds and builds and builds until we get the first like big storm of the movie, which is the tornadoes in Los Angeles.
The tornadoes.
I think this is my favorite part of the movie in terms of like storm. Well, personally, because I just love like the movie Twister, so it feels like a throwback. But this whole scene, like, I feel like is executed pretty well.
And I feel like tornado scenes always start with one of those spinny things in the yard. Like Twister, when the tornado's coming, there's a spinny thing in the yard. With this movie, it starts with the spinny thing in the yard, so you know there's a tornado coming.
Yeah, any slight breeze, you're like, Twister, Twister, it's a Twister, guys. Yeah.
That's not just a Twister. That's an F-12.
Yeah. We both had that, like, you said it, and I was like, I was literally thinking, is that an F-12?
Like when they combine, yeah.
Yeah, it's the sister mind.
It is.
But yeah, they don't have just one. They've got, like, six tornadoes that have touched down in Los Angeles.
It's so many.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I think that's one of the best like visuals too, is when it's the helicopter and the camera pans up as the helicopter flies up, and then you see like four or five tornadoes like mm-hmm. all around Los
Angeles.
Just
all over the city. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I mean, cool. Sucks.
I mean,
it's not real, guys.
Not in real life. It's cool to watch on the screen.
Yeah. It's cool when it's fictional. Not cool when it's real. But yeah, like so many things are happening in the scene, like when people are taking pictures and just standing in the street, which always pissed me off. Because look, I feel like even if you live in Los Angeles and you don't like experience a tornado every day, people would still be like, we should take cover, you know? Like, people aren't going to be, like, standing on the street being like, let me snap a little shot.
Like, the news guy is like, blah, 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 and then it gets hit by the sign. But we're far too Midwest for that. You know, we're Midwestern. We know that if the wind blows, you go to the basement or you get in a bathtub. An interior room somewhere. But also, I didn't realize, and it Claire brought this up while we were watching it the other day, that other parts of the country, they don't have basements. Like, to me, that's just something that everybody, I mean, if I know not all homes have basements, but like it's a normal thing in the Midwest for homes to have basements. And Claire pointed out that maybe in Los Angeles, they don't have basements because of earthquakes and all that. And that was like a mind blown sort of thing for me, that other parts of the country, they don't have basements.
Yeah, that, I said that to you when we watched it, and then I was like, I mean, I feel like that's accurate, and then I googled it this morning. I was like, do Los Angeles homes have basements? And it said, actually, not a lot of them do.
Well, there you go. You were accurate.
Because of something to do with soil, I think.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, they don't. But even if you don't have a basement, like, my first home didn't have a basement, you would still go in, like, the innermost part of your room, get in a bathtub. Right. But again, like, they're not used to this. So, like, to some extent, I could see them, like, being in their – I could forgive them, like, being in their homes and just, like, crouching down and, like, not knowing, like, where to go. But I can't, you know, think it's very smart to stand outside and take pictures and just be like, oh.
Oh, look at that. Shit's flying everywhere. You don't think you're going to get hit with something? Go inside. We'd be – like, you mentioned we'd be running down the street being like, what are you doing? Get to the innermost room.
Well, that one guy does. He's like, what are you doing? Like, get inside. And then a bus falls on him. Fell.
Right. He's like the head weather guy or something, because the other weather guy that was making out with the girl when it happened, he calls him and he calls mm-hmm. him boss. So yeah. I guess he says that because he knows what's going to happen, but he still gets hit by the bus. So
yeah, the guy was like, I think we should issue a weather or a not weather warning. We should issue a tornado warning. And then also, like, I don't feel like very confident in these people who are supposed to be monitoring the weather. And this guy's just smacking on this girl. And she's like, shouldn't you actually be watching the weather? And he goes, what weather? It's Los Angeles. Bitch, I know that weather still happens in Los Angeles. I know there was a bunch of rain months ago in that city. So it's not just all sunshine over there, although it is for a lot of the time. Mm.
And meanwhile, the phone's ringing off the hook in the background and he's just ignoring it. Like,
Oh, I just
rather get some tail.
Yeah. But yeah, then you had mentioned Tommy is the reporter who's like literally driving around being like, look behind me. That's a tornado.
And he's so close. It's not like they're, you know, very far away and they're talking about the tornado. He's like in it, downtown in it. And then he gets hit by a sign.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh man, Tommy.
It's his own fault.
Yeah, he was being pretty dumbass. Yeah, I think it still gets me though when those two people in the weather building, whatever it's called, get sucked away. And I think that's a really great, again, like crazy scene where he opens the window and we don't see what's out there.
Oh yeah,
only they do. You can kind of see it, like the reflection of the glass a little bit, but then it cuts to like outside the room and the lights like flicker and the building shakes a little bit, and then all you can see is through the door is like this like white light, and the janitor opens the door and like they were sucked away. It's gone. There's nothing on that other side anymore. Bye. So yeah, great moment. I think that was a really cool scene. And then the other one is the giant wave in New York City.
That just gives me like such a visceral feeling when I see it, when it just the water starts to move in, this like giant wall of water. And we talked about, I like everyone else in America has been very into North Sea TikTok. This is why I'll never go on a cruise. Like, rogue waves are a thing, and I don't need that in my life. I don't need that negativity.
No. Yeah. Well, I guess you shouldn't go anywhere where there's a city along the edge of water, because the rogue wave can also... Again,
we're talking about that.
Again, why we live in the Midwest.
Exactly.
And I'll visit the ocean every once in a while. But yeah, this part too was great build, because we've been seeing the rain coming all the time in New York City.
And the sewers backing up, like when they go and they're after the whole debate thing. And the, can we just talk about the like ceremony? Well, like it's not like a ceremony, like a mixer.
Oh, yeah.
After the debate, Emmy Rossum's dress is so early 2000s. And you can hear her clunky heels. It just, it brought me back to a time where I wore crushed velvet dresses and chunky heels.
And curled your hair. I feel like I feel like her hair was like, you could hear the
unbrushed out curls.
Yeah, it was so 2000s.
Yes.
But you know, love it or hate it, it was iconic. Yeah. Anyway, and so then basically New York City's been flooding for these last few days. Like the water is basically up to their stomachs at this point when they're trying to like get away. Yeah. I love how the one reporter is like, New York City is inaccessible.
Inaccessible. Eric laughed at me last night because when we were watching it together, that guy did that. And I went, oh, inaccessible. And he was like, what is wrong with you? You have to say it that way because that's how he says it.
Yeah, it's the only way I think I'm ever going to say inaccessible now. It's going to be
inaccessible.
Exactly.
I wrote it in caps in my notes.
I did too.
Did you really?
I even did like in-acc-accessible so I could enunciate it.
That's funny. Can we talk about how much 25 feet of water is? Because like, remember, okay, so I know that they get more than 25 feet of water, but they talk about how another place, what other parts of the country got like the water rose by 25 like feet.
Nova Scotia or something?
Something like that. But could you imagine just like standing there and this wall of water is coming at you? Which is kind of where we got our question. Claire asked me, what would you rather? Would you rather freeze to death? Would you rather be hit by the wave? Or would you rather die in a tornado? Claire, which one do you think you would prefer?
We talked about this when we watched it. And I think I would just rather be frozen to death.
Same.
because I think it's like the quickest thing, the quickest death of those three, except like a wave might be like impact might just go ahead and kill you. But if you're,
I don't know, I feel like you'd live for like 30 seconds at least. And I don't, I think I'd just rather freeze instantaneously because then you're not going to feel it and you don't have to think about it. You don't, I would prefer if I had to freeze to death and I didn't know it was coming. I think that would be better.
Yeah, I'd rather be the people in the helicopter who are like, what's happening out there? And then I open the door and I freeze. And I'm like, what?
Do you like that face?
Yeah, but yeah, like I said, when we talked about this, I was like, yeah, I fucking hate being cold. So like that does sound the worst to me, but if it's instant.
Right.
And then that's probably the one I'm going to pick because I feel like, again, with a wave, you get hit, you're going to drown. And I hate the idea of drowning.
Yeah.
It really freaks me out. And then also being picked up by a twister, I feel like you're going to get flung around for a little bit and you might be alive when it drops you. So
I feel like the twister is the worst.
Yeah, the twister is
the worst. Because what if you're up and you're just spinning around and, oh, there's a house and you get hit by a house or like a cow, aka a twister, which I know you just did with 30, Dirty, and Dying, which I loved, by the way. Yeah, I thought you guys did such a great job on that.
Thank you. Yeah. We were also on that episode being like, I mean, when you get sucked into a tornado, do your limbs get like ripped off?
Ooh.
So there's also that to consider. Yeah. So in,
good question.
In all of those instances, I think that getting frozen to death while sucks is probably like the lesser of those evils.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
I agree.
But yeah, so yeah, the giant wave hits New York City. The way that it just like comes rolling in and you see it like go by the Statue of Liberty and then it just like engulfs like cars underneath it.
Yes.
It's like as tall as the skyscrapers and buildings. It's nuts.
It almost reaches the top of the library that they hide in.
And when it's like rushing down that road toward Emmy Rossum, Laura, I should call her Laura, when she's like not noticing it, she's, I don't know how, very oblivious to it.
Very oblivious. Even my husband last night was like, what the fuck? Why is she, move? Like you would hear a wall of water coming at you, I feel like.
Yeah, it's literally like,
wait.
Oh my God, it's such like a moment when I remember watching it in the theater where it's like coming down the road and you see it like building and then when it comes to the library, it also like crashes into another one that was like coming from the side. So like two waves are colliding together and then you don't know if like they're okay in that library because like the library is not a skyscraper.
It's not that tall.
There's maybe like 2-3 stories in the library. So like you're not like as safe, I feel like. But they do get everyone in that library just in time. But can you imagine like – because I should call him – I would call him Jake Gyllenhaal. But
Sam
like gets in – like they're the last people to get in to the library. Everyone else behind them like –
in real life, they 100% would not have made it. They did not have enough time between when that wall of water was coming. Mm-mm. They were so far away at the taxi. And then he had to like, he ran up to her and he was like, look, instead of just going, run. Like, don't take the time to say, look, fucking run. Just grab her and pull. They wouldn't have. I'm firm in my belief that they would not have had time to get into the library and up the stairs.
Yeah, no, like, I mean... And she's like looking at it for a full like two like
right
because like your brain is registering like what and then it's like what and then you have to like
exactly skedaddle. Why he should have just been like fucking run, let's go.
Yeah, and not only like are they dealing with that, then like the water itself is fucking freezing because it's the ocean and the ocean's cold.
And the whole reason is because of the melted ice caps, which is making the water colder.
Yep, it all comes back.
Agree.
Yeah, and like I think like the part where they also like deal with the hypothermia, like I think like to move the plot along, like it makes sense because he has to reach out to his dad, who then says, "I'll come for you."
I'll come for you. Do you understand me? I will come for you. I love that part.
That was a great.
Yeah, like, oh, I've been a shitty dad my whole life, but I'm going to come for you.
Yeah, I'll be there. So, yeah, I think that made sense for them realizing, oh, like, Sam's alive and we're going to come rescue you. Mm-hmm. But then it was also like, another like very intense moment where you think that he drowns,
right,
and dies in the water, but then he survives. Also, like anytime I watch that scene, because you see the water rising and Laura's watching it, and as soon as like the water gets to the top of the ceiling, it makes this little bloop sound, and that's what I said when we watched it together.
I put that in my notes too. Bloop.
Yeah. But I don't think I ever learned how to deal with hypothermia in health class.
No.
So that would have been really helpful to know, like, you should warm the body so that blood doesn't rush back to your heart too quickly and then your heart explodes.
Yeah, we never learned how to actually save a person from their heart exploding in health class. That just wasn't something we covered. Mm-mm. But Emmy Rossum did, apparently.
Oh, good for her. See, she did learn something educational, because she was like, oh, my life I've been building for a future that doesn't exist. And I'm like, well, you did learn how to prevent hypothermia. That seems
how to save your teenage love. The teenage drama in this movie is it's great.
Yeah, the whole thing with like Sam and Laura too, again, like, I get it. They're trying to be like, oh, care about these two. They should get together. And I'm like, oh, I don't fucking care. Like, just show me more storms. I want to see destruction.
I want to see storms. And then there's the guy in New York who's like trying to mack on her, and Sam's all mad about, like, meh.
Oh,
we didn't
need
that.
I also didn't need Jason and the woman who's the NASA scientist from...
Oh, their flirtatious little...
Yeah, I was like, that... Yeah. Ugh,
it doesn't add anything to the movie.
Yeah, so, like, some of those instances, I was just like, whatever, but...
Speaking of things that, like, didn't really add anything to the movie or were a little over the top, can we talk about the wolves now?
Yeah, let's talk about... We'll just go talk about the wolves, because since we're on the conversation already, you go ahead.
The wolves were unnecessary. Like, they're already in a blizzard. We've already had this giant wave. It's freezing. They don't know how many other survivors they are. Emmy Rossum is dying. They have to go outside to go to this boat, even though they know a freeze is coming. And then on top of it, there's rabid wolves. I just feel like it's a little too much.
It was a little overkill. Mm-hmm. And I love how they circled back to it, because before the wave hit, the, like, two zookeepers, like, go in.
Wolves are out.
And they're like, the wolves got out. And they're just like, where'd they go? And nothing is mentioned about them again until we see them running toward the boat.
Trying to eat them.
Yeah, when they are trying to get the medicine and supplies. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's a lot.
They do it for the drama.
I get it. But there's also a lot of things in this movie that are a little too on the nose. Like when they go to the museum and they see the mammoth who's like frozen, and they say, and the mammoth was frozen with food still in its stomach and mouth. I get that it's foreshadowing, but it's so on the nose.
Yeah, it's really on the nose. Because I feel like, wasn't it that by that point we already saw the helicopter fall out of the sky and freeze instantly? Or did that come later?
I don't remember.
I can't remember when that happened, but I was like, okay, well, we can see what's happening here. Mm-hmm. There were moments where I was like, we could have avoided this maybe, or like just restructured this better.
Yeah. And I feel like we're harping on the movie a lot. I love the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic. But like, this is what you do. You know, you go through the movie and you.
And I think it's like, how am I trying to say this? It's like a product of the early 2000s,
yeah,
too. So like, take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, I mean, I can still like enjoy a movie and also be like, oh, I didn't really like that part or this part of it.
Right, right. And like you said, early 2000s. I mean, count the number of landlines that they have in this movie. There are still so many landlines, and that just like is from the before, you know, like. Things aren't quite as advanced as they are now in 2004. So from the before.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was the early 2000s. So, you take when I watch movies from the early 2000s, I'm like, there's always a part of me that's like, I still enjoy this, but also this didn't age well.
Yeah, things could be better. If it was redone now, things would be different. But for when it was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, like, the last storm is this freezing hurricane looking gnarly thing. One thing I remembered now when we were watching it, because there are these astronauts, as I mentioned, who are like seeing everything happen on the Earth. which must be like such a crazy experience.
Oh my gosh.
But when it's showing the two supercell storms next to each other, I was like, look, those are like the eyes of a gecko. And you said,
they look like boobies.
And then you said, that describes the two of us to a T.
It absolutely does. Absolutely. Like, I am boobies and Claire is gecko eyes.
Yeah. I was like, oh, it looks like little geckos. You know how like little geckos have eyes like to the sides of their head?
And they kind of bulge out a little.
Yeah. And you're like, and they look like nipples.
I mean, it's boobies. So it's pretty accurate.
But yeah, basically what's happening is this storm is forming where it is pulling cool air from the upper troposphere at such a fast rate that it's not able to warm up by the time it reaches to the surface. And so it is negative 150 degrees Fahrenheit. And I only know because Ian Holmes said, we had to look it up.
Because I said, when the plane fell, I was like, what temperature does that even happen at? And Claire said, well, we're going to find out.
Yeah. I said, keep watching because they...
Bilbo tells us.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like there's the three superstorms, like I mentioned, that have formed. And that's when they realized like in 7 to 10, not even that, but like in a week, they're going to be in a new ice age. And that's when poor Ian Holmes' crew is like, that's too late for us. Save as many as you can.
He literally says, and because I wrote it down because it's one of my the saddest things in the movie. He says, I'm afraid that time has come and gone, my friend, when Jack tells him that they need to get out of there. And it's like, the dude and his baby. I get that the baby and his wife, but like, oh, their storyline is just so sad.
I know. That they were my favorite group, I think, of
me too.
Anyone I saw on screen. And they like had the least amount of screen time, but I think it's because it's Ian Holm and I know him as Bilbo. Mm-hmm. And he was just so cute in this movie. He was just like a little man who knew science that I was like, I'm so heartbroken that.
Right.
And then when the lights go off in their little building, I looked at you and I was like, do you think that maybe they made it?
Do we know where they were?
They're in Scotland.
Okay.
Which was basically like that one supercell storm.
Yeah,
was
like right on top of them.
Yeah. So they already did get frozen to death.
They absolutely did not make it.
But since we didn't see their death on screen, there's always a part of me that's like, maybe they somehow made it.
I love the optimism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're gone. New York City is also like going like getting frozen over. And then, oh my god, stupid of stupids here, when everyone in the library decides to leave the library.
First of all, why doesn't Sam lead with the fact that his dad is a weather scientist? He's like, no, this is gonna happen, but nobody believes him because kid,
yeah,
you know, high school kid. I think if he had led with like, hey, my dad's a climatologist and he told me this is going to happen, people probably would have, I mean, he says it eventually, but I feel like it didn't make as big of an impact.
Yeah. I mean, he goes, my dad's a climatologist. He works for the government. And because that one guy is like, how do you know all this information? And so Sam says it. And that seems to like be enough of an answer for that guy. So.
Right. And the cop is super problematic in this movie. Like, I'm a cop. Everybody has to listen to me. We're going to do this. And everybody just blindly listens to him. They take no time to prepare. They get no supplies. They're just like, oh, let's go outside.
Do you think that Mother Nature says ACAB?
Oh my God. I hope she does. I think she does. Because remember in the end, we see him frozen. She's like, ha, bitch. I told you.
Yeah. Because there's that cop.
Mother Nature is a motherfucker.
Exactly. There's that cop. And there was also the cop when they were in Tokyo, like when the hail is falling. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what was going on, but he was yelling at the guy with his truck. And then he got hit in the head by the hail. And I was like, I don't think Mother Nature likes cops very much.
No.
Sorry. It's not me. It's Mother Nature.
Mother Nature.
But yeah, like I remember when we watched this with mom finally, when we watched it at home back when I was younger, much younger. And that scene where Sam says, my father's a climatologist. Our mom said, I think I'd listen to the climatologist.
And the fact that he works for the government, it's not like he's just like a climatologist on the side. He's not like a weatherman at your local weather station. He works for the government. I mean, we don't have a lot of faith in our government, so I get that part. But, like, I think I'd trust that over some cop just being like, we gotta go.
Yeah.
We don't know where we're going or how we're getting there, but we got to go.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, like, there was also that woman who said she had, like, gotten through to her sister a while back, and her sister said they're evacuating everyone to the south. And I was like, yeah, but also at that point, they knew that a lot of people in the north were advised to stay inside. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that should have been on her sister to be like, but you should stay inside.
But also, how did she get a hold of her sister?
I think it was like maybe just a instance, you know, just a one instant of a signal. I don't know.
Okay. Because like you're underwater basically. So like aren't cell towers no longer working at this point? And this was early cell phone stuff. So it just to me was like, how did that happen? Like I get being on the landline and getting through because that's a whole different kind of system. But
that's a good continuity question because they were like they had no cell signal and Sam basically had to almost drown
right
to like get through to his dad. But then this woman's like, I got a signal just now. It's fine. Yeah. So like
whatever. Plot holes.
Whatever. But then like, yeah, like it's like this very small ragtag group of people trying to survive and possibly like the only time that book burning has ever been acceptable.
Yeah. But also, did they think that they were the only ones that survived? They were so surprised to see that there were people like out walking on top of the ice in the city. Did they think that they were the only ones that survived? That doesn't make any sense to me. There's a lot of tall buildings in New York. Yeah. So I guess, I don't know. It was just weird.
I guess because they saw so many people trying to leave the city that maybe they just thought like most people were not smart and not staying inside.
But also we never see any bodies. Like we don't see we do later, but when we see the water, like when the ship comes in, oh my god, that scene is just terrifying to me. Mm-hmm. When that big oil rig or whatever it was that we figured out it was comes in and it's like scraping the bottom. It's horrifying. But also, where are all the floating bodies?
Yeah, we were like, there would so be like so many dead bodies.
So many dead bodies. Just like, that's what it was. Because the boat hits the bus that the guy was on. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wouldn't it be funny if he just like if he floated out of the bus all dead? And then we realized that there were no dead bodies floating in the water. And that's just not realistic.
Yeah, no, there would totally be so many dead floating bodies. There might even, like, once the water froze over, there might even be, like, a hand sticking out.
People sticking out of the ice. I didn't even think of that. Like the mammoth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again.
Didn't think of that.
Again, like, what is this? PG-13? Maybe they couldn't have so many dead bodies floating around there.
But they showed dead bodies later, so.
They did. Those were maybe more digestible because they looked like they were
frozen.
Yeah. They were not as human looking.
They weren't drowned bodies floating in the water. I get where that could be a little
jarring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little jarring.
Yeah. Can we also talk about how devastating it was when Frank died?
I'm not ready.
You're not?
It's so sad. He sacrifices himself. Okay, so I have a question. If you were hanging at the end of a rope and you were in this, if you were Frank, would you cut yourself loose?
See, I'd like to say that, yes, I would sacrifice myself. But when push come to shove and like I was actually in the situation, I don't know what I would do. I would probably freak out and be like, get me up here now. And then everyone would die.
Everyone. Yeah, that's a hard one, especially because right before he cuts himself, he cuts the sled and we see it like fall and shatter on the escalator or whatever.
Like cut, like bro, like basically like, okay, so he's going to fall.
So he's going to fall and he's going to snap in two because it's, yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. I kept watching it and when I was taking my notes, I was like, I just feel like there was a way to save him that was better than what they were trying to do. But then I'm like, oh, am I victim blaming?
Also, you said Jason should have kept his gloves on, and I 100% agree.
Yeah, because
his hands were bleeding. Just keep your gloves on.
Yeah, you're going to have way better like support with that than taking your goddamn gloves off.
I assume it was some sort of grip issue, but still.
I feel like didn't Jason maybe also have a pickaxe? Maybe could have pickaxed their way to crawl at like forward to pull him up. I don't know what the plan was there.
But also, how did Dennis Quaid's pickaxe not shatter the glass when he, you know, like if the glass is glass and it's breaking, you put a pickaxe in it and it's going to break. So another plot hole.
part of me was also thinking maybe they could have swung him to side. But
I think that's maybe that's what they were going to do when Jack was climbing over to him. He just didn't get there in time because the glass started to break, maybe.
Yeah, I was really bummed that Frank – it's probably like my second saddest death next to Bilbo.
I learned a lot of things about myself during this movie. Like when the ambulance driver comes back for Lucy and the boy in the hospital, and I was like, this is why I could never be in a position like that because – I'm leaving. I'm sorry. Bye. I'm not. And like Lucy stays and the nurse leaves. And that was another question I asked you is if you knew that someone else was staying, would you stay or would you leave?
And I said, well, it depends on who it is. Cause I was like, cause I think you first asked when you asked me that, I was like, I thought you asked like, would you stay for the kid? And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I'd stay. But then you said, no, I mean like her friend. And I was like, well,
sorry.
I was like, I mean, if it was you, I'd stay. But if it was someone else, I'd be like, bye. And I'm not ashamed to say that.
Yeah, but I'm not also a good person. It's fine.
Lucy said it was fine. So it's fine. Okay. And Lucy was ended up being fine. So it all worked out.
Peter.
You know who we weren't also upset who died? The president.
Oh, yeah.
Were you sad he died?
No.
Okay.
The only thing I didn't like about that is then that Dick Cheney, vice president, got to be president because he was a dick and it was his fault that all of this, I mean, not all of it, but like they could have prevented a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And now he gets to be president. And like, yeah, he has some sort of like revelation at the end where he wants to become a better person. But like,
Yeah, he was a dick even before then, because like they, when everyone's trying to evacuate to Mexico and Mexico's like, how the turntables,
how the turns have tabled, or something. It's for all you Office fans, isn't that something Michael Scott would say?
Yeah, it's an Office.
Or was it Dwight or Michael?
Michael says it in the Office. He goes, oh, how the turntables. What he means, how the tables have turned. And basically, like, Mexico's like, actually, we're going to close our borders because too many white people are trying to get in here. And, I mean, I'm sure there's more than white people. I just associate
Americans.
That with, Americans. And it's only, like, when the vice president forgives all Latin American debt that they reopen. But it's, like, crazy because Americans are the ones, like, illegally crossing into
they cut the fence and they go through the river
which I think was filmed there, and like they actually filmed that part of the video or part of the film there. But yeah, like still even then, like the vice president's like, fine, I guess I'll forgive you.
But also, like, is he really giving anything up? Because America is really not going to be a thing anymore. You know, there's only, like, half of Texas and some of Florida and some of the southern states. So, like, we'll just forgive all your debt. It's fine. But, like,
America doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
So, there you go.
They're not really giving anything up, I think.
Yeah. And like you said, like, he does have his whole, like, speech at the end where he was like, we thought we could pummel. What is that word?
Pummel?
I don't know. We thought we could use like, or like, what does he say? I didn't write it down, but he says something about how we could use up all of our natural resources. Mm-hmm. And then
pummel through our natural resources.
Maybe that's
something like that.
I think the word pummel.
Plow, pummel. Whatever.
Something with a P. But he goes, we were wrong. I was wrong.
I was wrong. Well, good for you, but you're still alive. So
good for you, but you're still a dick.
Also, if the president hadn't sat on the phone with his wife for so long, he would have lived.
He was on his phone with his wife for so long.
So long. Everybody in D.C. was gone. And let's be honest, they would not have – Secret Service would have, like, picked him up and put him on the plane. They would not have let the president just stay on the phone for that long. And then he dies.
Yeah, they were treating him like he was treating it like I'm the captain of the ship and the captain will go last and wait for everyone else to escape. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, no, I don't think that's how it would play
especially
out.
Especially not if you have a Dick Cheney vice president.
Also,
please.
Do you think if it was that close, could they not have just gone to their underground bunker? And would would the ice like reach that far?
I don't know. That's a good question. Because, you know, in all the movies where or shows where there's we see presidents, they have like that secret sort of like nothing can penetrate it room. I wonder. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I wonder how far down that is. And like,
I thought it was pretty far down.
Yeah.
Pretty far down.
That probably would have been smarter.
But oh well. I mean, the president and the vice president weren't the brightest in the bunch in this movie. So joke's on them. Yeah. And so basically, we're kind of at the end of the movie. We've gotten to the point where things are getting crazy. They know this eye of the storm is coming and it's going to freeze everything. We already mentioned Laura got a cut on her leg and they have to like get the medicine to rescue her because she has blood poisoning and that looks really bad.
How did she not know? She's in a knowledge decathlon and she doesn't know that, like, you know, she had a fever. It had to hurt and she didn't look at it. It was gnarly looking when they lifted her pants leg and she didn't want to say anything.
I don't even know if penicillin would have saved her at that point because I feel like sepsis is like really bad.
Yeah, it's real bad.
Like it can kill you in an instant. So,
and she probably would have had to like lose a lot of that leg if it was septic.
Yeah. Mm. And also, like, did they have enough penicillin for the guy who got his leg bit by the wolf?
Right.
Because he definitely
has. Don't see them take a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I would. And they only. Why are they only taking penicillin? That's another thing we talked about. Like, wouldn't you just take all of the medicine and be like, you know what? Just in case.
We might need all of this.
Just in case.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess they didn't have a lot of time to think because then the eye of the storm is basically there. And I think this is like really cool, too. Like, it's like the last big thing that we get to see. We've only seen it like come here and there in different instances, but like I like how we get to see Sam experience it versus like how Jack experiences it at the same time.
At the Wendy's?
Yeah, at the Wendy's. I was like, he's trying, was Wendy's or Arby's or some fast
Burger
food?
Burger King or something. Yep, yeah.
Burger King. But yeah, like, and Sam's trying, they're like trying to get back into the building. I think it's really cool how you see like the top of the Empire State Building start to like get frozen first and then it like pans out and you see all of the sky, not skyscrapers, but like all of the buildings like getting frozen over, and the way that it's like chasing them through the library.
Yes, I love that. And like the windows bust out because it's so cold. Yeah, I do like the sort of element of we got to get back inside now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like going down all of the corridors and like freezing over. And then same thing with like Jack, he's like got to go into the ceiling of the fast food place and then like light the grease on fire to stay warm. And I love how they both of them close doors. And I
like, that's going to stop it.
Yeah. I was like, oh, and then the ice storm's probably like, oh, doors.
A door. Darn the luck. Also, Jason is completely passed out during this point. So he just shoves him through the roof and he falls. I love when Jason wakes up and they're in the restaurant, like in the kitchen, and the grill is on fire to try and keep. First of all, that tiny little fire would not have kept the freeze away, but whatever. Let's just suspend belief for a minute. But also he wakes up and he's like, what happened? What is going on?
I know.
All of a sudden, Jack's like, I had to throw you through the ceiling. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I like how when he passed out, we were like, you were like, what happened to him? And I was like, he was really tired. So he's just pretending so that
so he can be dragged.
So Jack can drag him because he's like, I'm tired of walking. Yeah. Somehow they make it. But you don't really know what's happened to Sam and his group, which I think is cool. Like, not cool, but like it is like setting.
Suspenseful.
Yeah, suspenseful. Yeah. I think that was a good way to like, you don't know what's going to happen. You only see them like throwing more books in the fire while the ice storm's like, like behind them. And so, yeah, like Jack and Jason like go finally get to New York City. Well, the storm has cleared too. But, like it just had to get to New York City and then it was like.
Then it was done.
I'm good.
Peace out, yo.
Yeah. So they walk into New York City. It's like this frozen city buried in the snow. I think this is also like a pretty cool CGI moment that we get in the film. But then, yeah, like they don't know if the library is still standing. Then they go over the hill and they see that it's only slightly buried in the snow. They go inside. They're walking around. They're like, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Is he alive? I don't know. And then they open the door. And I think, like, when I saw this in theaters, when you see, because, like, the camera pans over all of them sleeping, I was like, oh, my God, are they dead? Are they dead in there? They're all dead. They're just sleeping. And then, you know, Jack and Sam's relationship is 100% mended.
Just everything's fine.
Yeah.
He came for him.
Yeah. He's like, what did Laura? Laura says, who is that? And Sam goes, my father.
My father.
And they hug and their relationship is renewed.
And she's fine, by the way. She doesn't have blood poisoning anymore. She's totally fine.
She can walk around.
She's a lot, you know, just awake and fine.
Fine. Mm-hmm. Fine. I think it only been like, must have only been like a day.
Yeah, because they were in Philly. They were like close to Philly, I think. Were they close to Philly when Frank died?
No, they were just north when they were still in the car.
Oh, okay. So yeah, they had to have been pretty close.
Yeah, they were really close. So I think it wasn't too long after. And she's just like, yeah, I'm all better. I only needed one shot of penicillin. And
that's all it took.
Just a little penicillin.
My dumb ass was like, well, what about the wolves? And Claire had to point out that there was a freeze, so they likely died.
Yeah, I was like, I think they died in that ship. They got locked in there.
They did. And they froze to death.
Yeah, I feel bad. I kind of feel bad for the wolves. Like, it's not their fault.
Right.
They just be wolfing.
They just be wolfing.
But one of my favorite things, and thank God for TikTok sometimes, but one of my favorite things was I was on TikTok just looking up funny videos about this movie, and somebody said, wait for it, wait for it. And it was Jake Gyllenhaal in a red scarf at the end.
Forgot about that part when they go up in the helicopter and he's got the red scarf on. Tay-tay.
And I was like, Taylor, we found what happened to your red scarf.
We found the red scarf, Taylor.
Yeah, it was funny. In the video, they were like, what do I see here? And it was like, red scarf. I thought that was so funny. But yeah, then you see like everybody else who survived in New York City. Like, so not everyone was dumb. There's still hope for humanity.
Right. Some. A little bit.
You were like, are they going to fly our helicopters around to every roof line?
What? I mean, so if that many people survived in New York, right? And these helicopters, I assume they're government helicopters, right? Because mm-hmm. they went to get Sam and Jack. Are they just going to fly around to everywhere in the I don't understand. I need more clarification.
I guess they would maybe conduct some more rescue missions to different cities and see if there are any survivors. They'll probably like unfold that, but also it's going to take a while.
Yeah. And I also figured people would like start to, like, I guess they would be able to get a radio transmission of some sort if they had like an emergency radio and people would know, okay, we have to start walking south. So that would be the time to get your supplies together and start walking south.
Yes, agreed.
Not before. I do. I think it's just karma at the end where we see when they're coming into the city and we see the frozen cop on the ground. And it's like, should have listened to the weather scientist.
Yeah. The weather scientist knows all, sees all. Mm-hmm. He's not God, but might as well be.
I mean.
It is what it is. But yeah. And then basically at the end, we get the shot of the earth. And I looked at you and I was like, oh, Indiana's covered.
We'd be dead.
I don't think the eye of the storm ever went to Indiana though, so I was like, well, maybe it's just snow. Like, certain parts are just snow and certain parts are frozen over.
I wonder how big the eye of this is. So like, I didn't think about that. The eye didn't actually like travel to all of those places, so all those, and it only froze in the eye of the storm, right? Mm-hmm. Mm.
It came down from Canada.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
So I think it was,
we'd be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'd just be cold.
And I was thinking, though, I was like, man, I don't have a fireplace, though, in my house. So, like, what can I do? I was like, maybe I can get the dumpster bin and bring it inside. But then I was like, well, would the plastic melt from the fire? And
you can come to my house. I have, like, a German wood fireplace thing that we'd use it. Man, we never used it before. But
well, Mom and Dad have, like, five fireplaces.
Kristen has a fireplace, too. So we could go there.
Yeah. So there's definitely places, but I was like, man, I don't have a fireplace. That's a problem. I feel
you could bring the grill inside.
Oh yeah,
and light the grill.
Okay, yeah, I feel better now.
There you go.
Okay,
I'm smart.
I would live. Yeah, and that's basically the end of the movie. They're in a new ice age. That would be my worst nightmare.
Oh my god. Just here's the thing: in any sort of situation, whether it be like a zombie attack or the world ending or so, I would die immediately. Like I listen to a lot of survival podcasts and like what to do if you're hiking and you fall down the mountain or if you're on a cruise and the ship sinks. But in reality, I would die immediately.
Yeah.
I'd be out.
There was that one TikTok I sent you. It was the woman who was watching the big wave come through New York. And she was like, I think if that were me, I would just jump in the water and say goodbye.
Bye. I'm good. Now, if my kids were with me, I'd try to stay alive to save my kids. Yeah. And then if it happened, it happened. But like, if it was just me, I wouldn't make it.
Yeah. I think like, it's hard because I would want to like do everything I could to survive, because I think there's a part of your human brain that's like, it's like goes back to the paleo, you know, era where like
that instinct to survive.
Yeah, you're doing mm-hmm. everything you can to survive. Yeah. But also like I think about if a meteor would ever come and like hit the earth, like I would just want to sit and like sit on like a really like beautiful grassy knoll and watch the sunset and then have the, you know, meteor take me out.
You know, that reminds me of a really good movie that I haven't seen in a while. Have you ever seen Melancholia with Kirsten Dunst?
No.
Okay, so basically what's happening is that the moon is, I think it's the moon, I'm pretty sure, is going to hit Earth, right? And it's, I mean, it's going to be cataclysmic. Nothing's going to survive this. And throughout the movie, you just keep seeing the moon get closer and closer. And they know there's nothing they can do to survive. So at the end, they're just laying like in the grass near a pond and watching it come. And it's just such a cool scene to me. And that's, I think that's probably what I'd want to do. Like be mm-hmm. with my family, be in like a serene, beautiful place and just
die.
Kick it.
It's so crazy you mentioned Kirsten Dunst. Is that who you said?
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst. She's in Melancholia.
I was
I'm pretty sure Peter Skarsgård is too.
Well, I was pulling up IMDb trivia earlier and I was just like pulling like just so I could reference if I ever needed to, and I'm glad I did because it says cameo under the cameo section. It says Kirsten Dunst was in this movie.
Where?
This is Kirsten. I do not know if this is factually accurate, guys. I mean, it is IMDb trivia, so take it with a grain of salt. But it says Kirsten Dunst standing behind Sam near his elbow with her sweater pulled up over her nose and mouth when Sam calls his father to tell him the sewer has backed up in the school.
Now I have to rewatch it to find out.
Now I have to go see if it's her. And I'm like, also, well, if her sweater is pulled up over her nose and mouth, how can you even tell it's her?
She was like a star by this point, right? She wasn't just starting out.
Yeah,
2004.
When
like she
was in the Spider-Man movies by then.
Yeah, she was well established.
Yeah,
so that's weird.
I don't know if that's true, so whoever
it sounds suspect
might go back and double check that one, but it's on IMDb trivia, so I feel mm-hmm. like I should share. But yeah, I think the last thing before we go to our segments that I just wanted to bring up is like going back to the global warming of it all. And I was curious if this film actually did change public opinion about climate change. And because every article I read was like, oh yeah, some say it did have like an impact and like it wasn't like much, but it was some. So there were some data points that I found that I just want to end on a good note with. But according to a study published in the journal Environmental Communication, there was a significant uptick in the number of Americans considering climate change a pressing issue following the film's release. After the movie's release, the UK's then environment minister acknowledged the film's role in increasing public interest in climate change, stating that it could spur greater international action. And then finally, within a year of the movie's release, a comprehensive and detailed peer-reviewed investigation by the Yale Program on Climate Change Communications established that The Day After Tomorrow, quote, had a significant impact on the climate change risk, perceptions, conceptual models, behavioral intentions, policy priorities, and even voting intentions of moviegoers.
Wow.
Bitch.
And that makes sense because, you know, at the beginning we said that this movie made more of an impact than an actual scientific study. So
yeah,
I think that pretty much sums us up as humans.
Yep. if we read a scientific study, we're like, boring.
Make a movie about it.
Make we're a movie good. About it, though. We're all ears. So, yeah. And that's the day after tomorrow, guys. Yay. We did it. But we still have some segments to get into, and I didn't warn Kelly I have segments. But you
hit me with them.
You what?
I said hit me with them.
Okay. First segment is Duflick. So, like, these are rhetorical questions about stupid moments in the films, or like, why would they do that, or why did they do that? And I think we've like talked about a few of them already, but my first Duflick was, why Duflick weren't the wolves in a better enclosure?
How did they get out so easily?
I think because of the flooding, I guess. Like, that's all I can.
But I do remember the part where they were like chewing through the wood because they know something's coming. Like, all the animals are freaking out because they know something's coming. So I guess if they get aggressive enough, they can just chew through whatever they want, which doesn't make me feel good about going to the zoo.
No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I guess just, yeah, like you said, because they were so like wanting to escape that they were willing to do whatever to get out. But then I was like, well, what about the bear? Or what else was in that area?
There was a lot of stuff. I don't remember.
I know there was a bear.
There was a bear.
And there were wolves. Okay, here's one I've always, always wondered, and I'm so curious to hear your take. But when they are examining Laura, and the one librarian is like, books are not just for burning, and she's like using the medical dictionary to like find her symptoms and figure out what's going on with her. She's reading through like their options. She's like, she needs a heavy dose of penicillin or a strong antibiotic or ... And so I'm like, what Duflick was the or what? Because they never say.
Maybe it means she needs that stuff or she's going to die.
That's one theory. I think when I watched it again with our mom, she was like, or they're going to have to amputate it.
Yeah, I feel like she would have died because, like,
well, yeah, blood. So I was like, what? I want to know what's the or what. Now I feel like I have to look up this medical dictionary to find out what it was. But yeah, I think like
death is imminent.
It was either going to be like, or she's going to die, or you're going to have to amputate and then she'll die.
Right.
But yeah, other ones that we talked about were like, that we had talked about earlier already, were like, why did it take her so long to see the cut? Why did the president take so long to leave? Those were the only other ones that I had. Were there any?
I think we already talked about like why everyone would blindly follow the cop. Mm-hmm. So that was my kind of what the fuck.
Yeah, just because he's an authoritative figure, right. That means we have to listen to him.
Right. And nobody prepared anything or like got any extra clothes on. They were just like, let's go.
No, no preparedness. They were just like, let's get going. I'm sorry. I don't want to go outside even when it's sunny and like 40 out. Mm-mm. There's no way in hell I'm going to leave when it's snowing and like negative 150 degrees.
Right.
Yeah, I will just stay inside. Thank you very much. They also, for a library, they had a lot of extra warm clothes with them.
They did. And like a fire is, does that library actually have a fireplace? And like rooms like that where like it's just like a lounging area where you can just go and read by the fire?
I don't know. Maybe. It's an old library.
It is.
Okay, our next segment is Dick of the Flick, and I think it's the vice president.
100%.
Yeah. He's pretty much the worst of the worst. Like, he, like, doesn't listen to them at all. Like, even in that New Delhi, like, conference, at least the other, like, you know, countries were, like, taking him seriously. And they
right,
were, like,
asking him how long it's going to be, yeah, what's going to happen. And this guy is just like, well... He's like, do you have proof?
Yeah, he's like, why don't you leave the policy to us, young man? And that's when Jack's like, that was when his boss, I think, was like, well, we tried that approach, but you didn't care.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you didn't, what does he say? You didn't want to listen when it could have made a difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so actually, it's your fault that everyone in the North died.
Truth.
And you have to live with that.
Winter is coming.
Winter is here.
You are not the king of the North.
No. I mean, to some extent, I think Jack is a bit of a dick.
Oh, yeah. But he's like a bad dad dick.
Yeah.
Like bad dad, bad husband dick. Mm-hmm. But as a person, I think he's okay.
Yeah. I also wrote the guy on the phone who told his wife that he was just leaving work when he was clearly at the bar.
In Japan when he was drinking at sake at the bar. And then, didn't he die?
Yeah. He died. So that's what happens.
Don't lie to your wife.
Yeah, don't lie. So that's what happens. And then I wrote, anyone who doesn't believe in climate change is a dick, I think.
Yep.
So, sorry.
Agree.
Not sorry. So, no. But yeah, I think ultimately, like, the vice president.
Yeah, he was the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. And so now our last segment is how many flicks do we give? Really quick, I'm just going to read some of the awards. This movie won because it did win some awards.
Oh, really?
It's no Oscars.
I mean.
But it did win a BAFTA for Best Achievement in Special Visual Effects.
That tracks. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And it won an MTV Movie Awards for Best Action Sequence.
Okay. I don't know if I can see that.
That might have been the tornado scene.
Maybe.
But which was like really good.
Mm-hmm.
So good on them. But no Oscars for this one this time. I think this was starting to be the trend where critics were like, maybe we shouldn't nominate every disaster movie for an Oscar.
There's so many of them.
Yeah. But on IMDb, this movie has a 6.5 out of 10. And then on Rotten Tomatoes, it has 45% from critics and 50% from audiences. That's pretty low.
I don't always think Rotten Tomatoes gets it right.
You don't think it?
No, I don't think they do.
No, I don't think they do either. But this is like the lowest rated natural disaster movie that we've covered. At least like, especially Poseidon Adventure, like that was critically acclaimed. And then Twister was like somewhat critically mm-hmm. acclaimed. But this is like, no.
It should have been.
Yeah.
They missed out.
So what would you give Day After Tomorrow out of 5 flicks? And you can do decimal points.
So is 1 being the worst and 5 being the best?
Yes.
Okay. Do I have to compare it to other flicks that I've seen or just like for the time?
You can rate it however you feel is right in your heart.
I'm going to give it like a 4.5 because I really do feel like for the time that it was made very well. Yeah, there's plot holes and there's whatever. But I love the CGI. You know, they got the kind of tropes right. And it was interesting to watch. And the fact that I'll watch it anytime it's on TV really says a lot about the movie to me.
So would you lean more 4 or 4.5? I have to only because I need this for my letterbox.
I'm going to go 4.
Okay. I'm going to go a 4 out of 5 as well. I feel like that's where my heart is telling me to go. And I feel like that is still like a really good score for this. I mean, it's like an 80%. So definitely.
So like it's a B.
Yeah, definitely higher than the critics and definitely higher than the audiences. I think this movie is just a fun time. Like, I think anytime, like you said, it's on TV, I'm like, oh my God, Day After Tomorrow.
Right.
I feel like I can jump in at any point and I'm either going to come in at the tornado, the wave, or the freezing storm, and I'm going to have a fun time.
And you're going to be interested. It kind of hooks you.
Yeah. I'm going to be engaged. And yeah, I think like, the cast is great. Like, I love that we get these throwbacks to Dennis Quaid, Jake Gyllenhaal, Emmy Rossum, Ian Holm, too. And, I mean, even though, like we talked about, the science is not very accurate.
It's a movie, it's not a documentary.
Yeah, it's a movie. So I'm fine with things being exaggerated for the drama, for the flair. And at the end of the day, like, it made an impact and got people thinking about climate change. So I think it was positive overall.
Yay.
So, yeah. I wouldn't give it like higher just because I think for like some of the things we talked about with character development and storylines, I was like less interested in that. And I was like, just give me like more storms in that if you're going to go in that direction. So like some parts of it, I'm like a little bored by now. But for the most part, like the action definitely like picks it back up for me.
Yeah. Had there been more, because we talked about in the beginning, there's a lot of buildup to that sort of like big storm thing. If there had been like, I think more instances of us, because they talk about a lot of other disasters that are happening around the world, but we don't see them.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like maybe if we had seen some more of those, I would give it a 4.5. But really that point comes off to the 4 because of like, some of the plot holes, not the science, because they get to take liberties with science when they make movies. It's not like it's a documentary, like we said. But there are plot holes. The characters are kind of sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Some things didn't really age well. But overall, I think it's a good movie.
Yeah. Agreed. And I think it was the perfect way to end Mother Nature is a Motherfucker Month, because, like, I mean, literally every time I told people I was doing this series, they were like, are you doing the day after tomorrow? Are you doing the day after tomorrow? Like, you mentioned it. I had other people mention it. And I was like, we'll see.
We'll see.
So I feel like, and it's the Superstorm movie. So we're ending with a bang, you know. We started with the wave. We did the twister. So we had tornadoes. And then we're combining them and adding more.
This just brings it all together. Yeah. Ties it in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a great finale. And I'm so glad that you were here to do it with
me. I'm glad you asked me to join. I really love coming on and being a guest on the podcast. It's a lot of fun.
And it was our first time recording together in person.
Yes. And I love it so much more this way. I feel like we can interact and I don't feel so stiff and awkward, I think, when we're in the same room.
Yeah, I think, like, it's hard when you're doing it via camera because, like, sometimes there's a delay and mm-hmm. it's hard to, like, know when to start speaking. But, like, when you're in person, we can, like, riff off each other more.
Yes. So, yeah. I can see your face.
Yay!
And not just on screen.
I love how, because we also have cameras going for the video, for social videos later, mm-hmm. and we kept either looking at each other in direct.
I'm either here or I'm here.
Yeah. On the video or in person. So yeah, it's I'm excited to have everyone listen to this when it comes out.
Yay.
But that sadly means that Mother Nature is a Motherfucker Month is over for now. Who knows, maybe it'll come back in some form or fashion. Well, I'm sure we'll definitely do, like, more disaster movies at some point. But for our next episode, we are going to be doing our first horror movie of the season. Right? Yeah. I haven't done any horror yet this season. So we're going to be doing a horror movie. And Kelly, I think it's so perfect that you are here as this guest, because what is the recent horror movie that disturbs you so much?
Recent?
It's pretty recent. Anytime we talk about horror, you're like, this one fucked me up. It was
The Ring?
No, more recent than that.
Insidious?
Nope.
The Conjuring?
No.
Fuck.
Hereditary.
Oh God. Look, I can't. That's one that I will never ever watch again, ever. I can't. It was probably years ago that I watched it, because we lived in our old house that we used to rent, and I still see part of that movie in my head when I close my eyes sometimes.
Yeah, I've only seen it once, and now I'm gonna have to revisit it. Mm-mm. To talk.
I'm glad you didn't ask me to be a guest on that.
It was either gonna be between this or Civil War. Also, by the way, Alex and Danielle are coming back next episode, who are our regular co-hosts this season, so they're gonna be coming back to talk about Hereditary. But it was gonna be between that or Civil War. I don't think we could all get to see Civil War in time, so we're like, let's do Hereditary.
Ooh, good luck with that one.
I'm excited.
I'll try to listen. I'll do my best.
Listening, you can just listen. You don't even have to watch it. Rewatch it. We'll explain it all to you. But yeah, so we're going to be doing that next episode, so everyone prepare as best you can. And yeah, that brings us to the end of this episode. If you like listening, make sure to subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, leave a review, tell your friends all about us, tell your friends about Mother Nature is a Motherfucker Month. You told your coworkers.
I did. I told my coworkers about the one we used to do, and then about this one, and we were doing Mother Nature is a Motherfucker Month. And first of all, I mean, how can you not win with that, a title like that of a series? It's amazing. But they were all super pumped. So yeah, get the word out. Make sure you share and rate my lovely little sister's podcast, because she works really hard.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I would love it if you rate it. And, you know, you can let us know what your favorite, even in, like, you don't even have to, like, say how much you love the podcast. You can just leave a review with the name of your favorite natural disaster movie.
Yeah.
And I'll know what you mean. And it'll be like, we're on the inside. Like, I see you.
There you go. Like, we're together. We're friends.
Yeah. Like, you listen, and I appreciate that. But yeah, you can also follow us on social media. We are at Why the Flick on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Letterboxd. I'm pretty sure I am like one follower away from 1,000.
That's so exciting.
On TikTok, I'm going to check it again. Yeah, I'm at like $9.99.
I follow you on TikTok, I'm pretty sure.
I think you do.
I'm going to make Eric doesn't have TikTok.
I was like, I just need one person.
I'm going to get you that one person.
Yeah. You could be that one person.
It could be you.
Or you could be more than 1,000. That would be great. So definitely check us out there.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends, yeah. Kelly, thanks again for joining.
Thank you. I had such a good time. Like,
hugging you.
Hugs from across the room.
Yeah. But yeah, until next time, everyone. Bye.
Bye.